From listener supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's December 31st, 2024, the last day of the year. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, Gunathchish, Hawa, Tuexiknusum, Salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. Today, it's our year-end news roundup show. We'll look back on some of the news highlights from the year that was. We talk with Adeline Baxter, audience engagement editor, about the main stories that affected Juno this year. We also share a few of the most popular stories of the year. We meet KTOO's new managing editor, Claire Stremple, a former reporter at KTOO and the Alaska Beacon, now leading the newsroom into the future. It's the 2024 News and Review Roundup, this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan-A-D have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. 2024 has come, and on this last day of December is almost gone, and we thought it would be a perfect time to look back at 2024 and talk about a few of the important topics in and around Juno that impacted our community. I'm joined now by Adeline Baxter from the KTOO Newsroom. Adeline serves as the audience engagement editor and also recently served as the interim managing editor. Gunathchish, for joining me today, Adeline.
Thanks, Boston. Happy to be here.
So, Adeline, I thought it would be interesting to do the sort of standard year-end countdown of the top stories as viewed by our audience. And while we do that, we'll also round out and highlight some of the other stories and items that the news team shared in 2024. And also the thing that happened this year, one of the big things that happened internally for KTOO is that we turned 50. Now, you covered a story on the founding of KTOO. We had a special two-hour Juno Afternoon retrospective interviewing past news team folks and other people involved in the station. It was really fun. And in October, a big community concert took place to round out the celebrations. It was a huge year for KTOO, and we look forward to many, many more in 50 years and beyond, of course, as we continue into the future. I'm curious for you, Adeline, will you share one realization for you from the story about KTOO's founding?
I guess it really struck home for me how grassroots the beginnings of KTOO and pretty much every other public radio station was, that it was literally just people in the community wanting to have a independent local source to showcase music and their own interests and things. And then it just has become so, I mean, now it's three radio stations and a television station and a website. Like, so much has grown out of that. So I also learned about Elaine Mitchell, who some people call the mother of public radio in Alaska. And she first helped start KTOO along with a bunch of other people and then went on and use that model to help start stations around the state and also create this network that we enjoy today, where we all share news from our respective communities, and we all help one another out. And it's really cool to have colleagues in, you know, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Unalaska, Kotzebue, Petersburg. It's just one of the best things about working in radio in Alaska. So I owe a lot of that to Elaine Mitchell, as it turns out.
All right. Well, let's get into it. Let's start with the number five story, according to our website.
The number five story on our website, it was by Yvonne Crumry, and it was a story about the Denver Art Museum denying Tlingit claims for repatriation of several items that were in the museum's collection. And this has been a big topic nationally over the last few years, repatriation. And so for this particular story, Yvonne spoke to a reporter from Colorado, a Denver Post reporter, about what was happening between the Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska and the Denver Museum that had these particular items. And then, of course, it gets into the way that these artifacts were acquired in the first place. And there's just a lot with that. So there's been a lot of happy stories. I mean, happy in terms of a lot of joy and celebration here in Southeast Alaska as some of these items are repatriated from other places. There was a case like that from Seattle with a really gorgeous Chilkat robe in the last couple of years. But clearly, it's not a closed conversation. It's going to be going on well into 2025 and beyond.
Yeah, continuing on. And there were some other national stories in that indigenous space. President Biden apologizing for the boarding school tragedies all throughout this country. And then locally, we also had some stories happening. There was the cake apology that happened. And then we had a story that we want to play for you that Yvonne Crumry also reported on. And it was about the Angoon apology that happened, that the Navy apologized for the bombing of Angoon. Let's take a listen to that story from Yvonne now.
142 years ago, Angoon went up in flames. Ha'ashkuke ka yanasach Barbara Cariente Nelson's grandmother survived the bombardment as a young woman.
Can you imagine my grandmother at 26 having to scramble and run with her family? And the fear, the real fear.
According to written accounts of villagers who survived the bombardment, it all started because a Tlingit shaman for the community was killed in a whaling accident. U.S. government documents at the time claimed other Tlingit villagers took two of the white whaling crew as prisoners and demanded compensation of 200 blankets from the whaling company. Tlingit accounts deny that prisoners were taken. Then the Navy got involved. They said the village wasn't owed anything, and in fact would be fined 400 blankets for taking prisoners.
They scrambled to come up with blankets at the onset of winter. What were they going to do without blankets themselves?
They only delivered about 80. As a result, the Navy attacked. Six children were killed in the shelling, and an unknown number of others died in the following months from exposure and starvation. Since the 1980s, representatives from Angoon have been asking for an apology. In June, the Navy announced it would issue one. They planned it with Angoon elders for the anniversary of the attack on Sunday. Cariente Nelson said Angoon holds an annual memorial for the children killed during the bombardment. And every year, leaders ask those in attendance if anyone from the Navy is there to make an apology.
And there was no reply. Today it appears there will be a reply.
Though it's a long time coming, Cariente Nelson said many in the community have mixed emotions about the apology.
How do you restore a human being? How do you restore a family? How do you restore a community who have been the target of annihilation?
On Saturday, Tlingit people from all over Southeast Alaska and beyond gathered in the Angoon High School gym to receive the apology. They danced wearing regalia, button blankets, carved formline hats featuring bears, frogs, wolves, and killer whales, with mother-of-pearl eyes and ermine pelt adornments. U.S. Navy Rear Admiral Mark Sakato presented the apology to hundreds in the room and thousands watching on a live stream.
The United States Navy apologizes on behalf of the United States Navy to all the Tlingit peoples of Angoon for the pain, suffering, and generational trauma inflicted by the bombardment of their village. Acknowledges that the Tlingit people of Angoon did not deserve nor provoke the bombardment and subsequent destruction of their village by United States naval forces.
Then clan elders responded. Here's the Kline D clan's Alan Zuboff.
Admiral Takaru, the dog salmon, are very happy to say we accept your apology.
And Dan Johnson Jr. of the Deshiton clan.
None of us in this room will ever forget, ever. We will take it to our graves. We will teach it to our children.
Shkenduton George grew up with this story. And as a teacher, she would teach her students about the shelling and burning of their village. And George said she's excited to teach this part of the history now, too.
It doesn't matter how many times I talk about it, how many times I talk with students about what happened. Like, every time I tear up. Like, the emotions never go away. And that feeling of injustice and disrespect, it's going to be amazing. To be able to say the right thing happened, finally.
The celebration lasted into the early morning hours on Sunday. The Navy also issued an apology last month for the burning and bombardment of the nearby community of Cake in 1869. It's expected to do the same for Wrangell. Reporting from Angoon, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
That was Yvonne Crumry with the story about the Navy finally apologizing for the 1882 destruction of Angoon. And she mentions in there that the Wrangell apology will be coming up soon, and I believe that's scheduled for January of 2025. Now, there's some other stories that I also wanted to highlight here. Clarice Larson did a story on the 40-year-old totem pole that found a new home at Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. And we're going to link to all these stories on this webpage, so you can find them all in one place on the Juno Afternoon website at k2o.org/JunoAfternoon. But then there were some really wonderful honors that were bestowed this year. And I just want to mention these real quick. These will also be links that we'll put in there. The Governor's Arts Awards recognized two Juneau residents, which I thought was really cool. Hune Lance Twitchell, who's been on the show numerous times, won the Alaska Native Arts Award for the distinction of his commitment to preserving Indigenous languages. And then Vera Starbard, who is a local writer, was recognized as the new writer laureate for Alaska, which is really cool. And we will have a longer conversation on Juno Afternoon with Vera Starbard coming up in the first part of 2025. And lastly, I want to mention that President Biden awarded Sea Alaska Institute President Rosita Wuerl with a National Humanities Medal this past October. So some national awards, some state awards for our local Juno residents, which is really cool. Now, Adeline, the news team, in addition to stories, all these stories that they covered, they've also been doing some really cool other projects that have been on the air. Can you tell us a little bit about, like, Tlingit Word of the Week, which is one of my new favorites?
Yeah, that's been one of the two really exciting projects that we launched this year with Yvonne Crumry leading the charge. As some people might know, we've been taking Tlingit language classes for a few years now. Once a week, we get together with Hatush Latish and some other community groups to learn. And Yvonne has really taken that to, a whole nother level. And she attends classes at UAS and has really gotten into language learning. And so it made total sense for her to bring that to the station and launch this series called Tlingit Word of the Week. And she worked very closely with Professor Hune Lance Twitchell out at UAS. And he had this incredible audio that he had recorded with Gold Pelt Heritage years ago with some elders, native speakers, culture bearers. And he had been trying to find a way to use it for a while. And so we were able to collaborate with him. And now we have this lovely series that's been going since the spring. Every week, Yvonne uses their voices to bring these words to life. Obviously, no one's going to learn to speak Tlingit through Tlingit Word of the Week. It's just sort of, you know, one word at a time, but I've learned several words for things around. I think mine and a lot of people's favorite is cat, which is douche. That's, you know, it's just an easy word to remember. This week it was beaver. So just lots of really useful things. And then Yvonne also helped launch Tongass Voices, focusing on one person from within or outside the community who's passing through and just giving them sort of an open forum for about 3 to 4 minutes to talk about what they're doing, what they want to talk about. And so that's just been a really cool way to get to know certain members of the community that we don't always hear from. That was the whole idea there of, like, you know, we are always trying to seek out voices that we don't always hear. But at the end of the day, you end up hearing a lot from politicians and city leaders and business people who tend to be newsmakers. And so this was a way for us to bring kind of the rest of Juno onto the airwaves a little bit more regularly.
They've been wonderful. And you can get all of those on the website. You can go back and listen to them. And they're usually, you know, about 4 minutes long, 3 to 4 minutes long, which is really cool. And then this is also a good time to mention the other project that you all did this year. And it sort of was like a season of it called Curious Juno. And can you tell us about some of the Curious Junos that popped up this year that people loved?
Yeah, well, Curious Juno has been a beloved series for a long time. And this year we decided to do it instead of spreading it throughout the year, kind of all in the spring and early summer. And so there were 10 episodes, I believe. The great thing about Curious Juno is that the stories are generated by our listeners. And so people write in, ask us a question, and then we set out answering it. And sometimes it's easy, and very often it's not. It takes like a decent amount of research, or in the case of reporter Anna Canny, wandering through parking garages late at night multiple times to try to find out where the Foodland ravens roost at night. And she, spoiler alert, was ultimately successful, although it took a lot of checking. Those ravens, they're tricky. Some of the other ones, Clarice Larson did a really great story about the fast food chains that used to exist in Juneau and that still do. Because, you know, if you've been in Juneau for a long time, a lot of people of a certain age especially mourn the loss of Taco Bell, which has been gone for quite a while, but people still remember when there was a Taco Bell. And so she dug into the factors that have played into why fast food places come and go, what's made places like Subway and McDonald's able to withstand that. And it's a really interesting story with some, you know, fun local color too. And then Yvonne Crumry did one that I really loved about place names and the original names of some of the mountains in Juneau, Mount Roberts, Mount Juno, Mount Jumbo. And that was really popular. People really loved learning that. So I hope we can do more of that kind of thing. And obviously names, we've been over the last decade or so, Juno has been adding a lot of original Tlingit names back to places, schools, mostly, but some other things too, trails. So it's really interesting just to know what the original people here referred to mountains as and what the meanings behind some of those names were. My favorite is Shatlach, was Moldy Head. I think that was the name for the top of Mount Juno. And that I just think is such a amazing descriptor when you really look at it. Like, yeah, there's a bit of a moldy head up there.
I love that. And will Curious Juno be back in 2025?
Yes, it will. I can't exactly promise when, though we'll have to go through the questions that we've been receiving over the past few months. And, you know, it's unfortunately we're never able to answer all of them, but we try to do especially ones that multiple people ask, because that's often the case. So we'll be going through them, and sometime in the coming months we'll launch a new season, or who knows if it'll be a season or we'll just spread it out differently. But
and if I wanted to submit a question, how would I do that?
Oh, yeah. You can go to ktoo.org/curious, and there's a submission form there that you can fill out. And then that goes to an inbox that we check. And we try to follow up with people once we've answered their question. But, you know, feel free. You can also email news@ktoo.org if it's a more pressing question, of course.
Okay, number four on the list of the most popular stories for 2024, and this is the subject that was hotly contested all year long, tourism. This story is from Clarice Larson. It was about how Juno has negotiated a limit on how many passengers can come off the ships. Let's listen to the story, and then we'll talk a little bit more about it.
After the record-breaking boom in cruise ship tourism following the COVID-19 pandemic, city leaders in Juneau have been publicly considering if and how they could limit that growth in the coming years. And now, they've negotiated an agreement with cruise lines that they believe does just that. Starting in 2026, Juneau will have a cap on the number of daily passengers that come off cruise ships. 16,000 people on most days and 12,000 people on Saturdays. Currently, Juneau can see up to 21,000 visitors on its busiest days. Juneau's visitor industry director, Alex Pierce, says the agreement was finalized Friday, and she calls it groundbreaking.
This has been a hard-fought agreement for the city and is a huge win for the city. It is exactly what I wanted out of this, and I'm extremely happy that we're here.
Earlier this month, the Juneau Assembly approved the limit numbers. Last year, a record-breaking 1.6 million passengers visited Juneau, and about the same is expected this year and next. Pierce says the new agreement should keep the annual passenger count at that same level. She says that will be key in curbing future growth while also protecting local businesses that rely on the industry.
This was an effort to kind of thread the needle and balance the competing voices that we hear in our roles as public officials trying to work through this.
But some residents in Juneau say they are less than impressed.
The pretense that it's doing anything to address the real issues of the community is just absurd. It's totally worthless. So it's not even worth the paper it's written on.
That's Carla Hart, a longtime advocate who often criticizes the growth of tourism in Juneau and the effect it has on the people who live here year-round. She says the agreement and other agreements the city has done in the past to mitigate the impacts of the industry are all for show.
They're not doing anything that really protects the community as a whole.
Because of that, she and other residents have been attempting to take it into their own hands to find ways to limit tourism without necessarily getting the consent of cruise lines. Hart and four other residents are trying to get a question on the local ballot this October, asking whether Juneau should ban all large cruise ships on Saturdays. So far, she says they've collected enough signatures to get it on the ballot, but the city clerk is still verifying them.
I think that's our best immediate vehicle to get word to the industry and to the city leaders that the community really wants some relief from this industry.
If the Ship Free Saturday ballot initiative is passed by voters, that could go into effect as soon as next year. On the other hand, Pierce has long advocated that negotiations are far better than trying to enforce regulations. That's because other communities have tried to do that and wound up in court. And the cruise industry has sued Juneau in the past. The lawsuit over how the city spends the money it earns from passenger fees was settled in 2019, with both parties agreeing to work together to settle disputes outside of court.
It's not that the city is beholden to the cruise industry or anything like that. And I do hear that narrative sometimes. It's always a lot easier to solve a problem with somebody you have a positive relationship with than somebody who you're in a big legal fight with all the time.
Pierce says there could be a lot of unknown implications to passing a ballot initiative like this one, both legally and logistically. And she doesn't know how it might impact the new agreement.
There was a ballot measure that limited cruise ships that passed in Bar Harbor, Maine. And there are lawsuits, on top of injunctions, on top of kind of different trading legal barbs. And the city spent a lot of money on legal fees. So I think there would be a lot of legal activity after a ballot initiative passed.
The negotiated agreement means once the numbers go into effect in 2026, they will remain in place in perpetuity. But the city and cruise lines also agreed to meet annually, and changes can be made during that discussion if agreed upon. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
That was Clarice Larson reporting on tourism and all the things that have to do with ships, which was a hotly contested topic this year. She mentions at the end of that story, Adeline, that the Ship Free Saturday petition was with the clerk's office, and they were reviewing those signatures to see if it could get on the ballot. As we know, it did get on the ballot. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened with the Ship Free Saturdays?
Yep, absolutely. So that was really the talk of the town leading up to the October municipal election. A ton of forums, a ton of money spent by local business and the cruise industry, obviously on the no campaign for that. Ultimately, the ballot measure was defeated. About 60% of Juneau voters voted against it, but 40% voted for it. So, you know, it wasn't a completely rousing defeat. It has definitely expanded the conversation around limits here in town. As you heard in Clarissa's story, those limits are going to go into effect next year. And then these discussions are ongoing, of course, in other communities throughout Southeast Alaska. KCAW in Sitka has reported they've also got their own ballot initiative on limiting cruise ships there that is out for signatures and may appear on a ballot in this coming year. Even though this ballot measure in Juneau was defeated, this conversation is not going away. And certainly things have come about since the election that have really just underscored how the number of passengers visiting Juneau is just going to continue to be controversial ongoing.
Yeah, we have this. There's also, I remember, you know, there were two MOAs. There's the passenger limit, but then there's also the ship limit, the five ship limit, five large ships. Right. But then we learned that there's a potential for a new dock on the backside of Douglas.
Right, yeah, and though that announcement came right as election results were certified, which upset a fair number of people, not least of all the city itself, who had no idea that this discussion was taking place between Gold Belt Inc. and Royal Caribbean, who have been talking about creating a new cruise dock on the backside of Douglas Island, miles from downtown, miles from where all the other cruise ships are docking during the summer. And it's just really interesting because this is Gold Belt's land. And this area of Douglas, there's been talk about developing it for a very long time. There's the Pioneer Road that's been built out there, but not a lot of other development has really happened. This is sort of, you know, the way that this announcement came about, it sort of signaled to some folks that the cruise industry, while they may sign on to certain agreements with promises to limit certain things, that doesn't mean that they're not going to, you know, find other groups to work with beyond just the municipality that further their business interests. Of course, that is the whole idea of a business, is to look for ways to make more profits. So that's going to be a really interesting discussion. There's not a whole lot known about what the timeline is for that development. And obviously now the city knows about it. So they're going to be, at least to some degree, involved in those discussions. So that's going to be a fun 2025 topic to continue covering.
Now, speaking of ballot measures, this is a good spot to mention school board and school budget. And can you give us just like a quick roundup of what happened around the school board and the school budget?
Right. Yes. So this was, gosh, it feels so long ago now, but last spring, this was the thing that was the talk of the town, was the fact that it began in 2023, the school district, Juneau School District, found out there was a huge deficit due to a variety of factors. So the school district had to take some extreme measures to address those. So one of those measures involves combining Juneau's high school and middle schools. And that whole discussion was happening at the school board, community meetings throughout the spring. And then I believe it was April, the vote happened where they officially decided to consolidate. And that was, you know, very controversial. A lot of parents were upset, a lot of students. So now Juneau Douglas High School, Yadat Akhtle, is the only high school in town. And Thunder Mountain High School previously is now a middle school. Some of the other middle schools have been either shuttered or are being used for other purposes. And it involved a little bit of like juggling things around with some other district-owned buildings. Some of those buildings now have been given back to the city. And so the city is now deciding what to do with them. And then, of course, going into this fall, it was, how are things going to go with all of those students now into one building? And there were definitely some parking issues downtown. That's always tricky. And, you know, there have been some other discussions about growing pains happening at the schools. But now the school district does seem to be on more firm financial footing. But one of the things that did come out of that vote, of course, was a recall petition for a few of the school board members who did vote for consolidation. There were some concerns by the petitioners about the way that that vote happened. And so there was an effort to recall two school board members, but ultimately that did fail. And so the school board president, Dee Dee Sorensen, and vice president, Emil Mackey, will continue to serve on the school board.
I want to move on to the number three, the most popular story of the year, and it happens to be one that you did, Adeline. So let's take a listen to this story. This is Juno Hunter's recount brown bear attack on Admiralty Island that left one battered but alive.
Amanda Compton and her friend Nicholas Orr have been hunting together for years. At the end of September, they took Compton's boat to a peninsula on Admiralty Island across from Port Snedisham. A few miles into their deer hunt, they were walking single file with Compton in the front through open muskeg. As they stopped by a grove of trees, a brown bear rushed them without warning.
I would say it was 2 seconds of seeing the bear, seeing and registering that it was charging full force for me, and also determining that I had no time to pull a shot off.
The bear was on Compton immediately. It grabbed her head in its jaws and shook her for a few seconds. She says it's hard to know exactly how long it lasted.
I was lucid through the whole thing. There just wasn't enough time to be terrorized.
Then, just as quickly, the bear released her and moved away. But it didn't leave. It watched from 10 or 15 feet away. Orr had fallen to the ground when the bear charged, but managed to get back to his feet and fire his gun. The bear ran back into the trees where they noticed a cub for the first time. They believe the sow and cub are fine. Compton's head was bleeding, a lot. Her hand was also injured. But she could walk, and her mind felt mostly clear. She just couldn't believe she was alive.
I grew up here, not in Juneau, but in Alaska, and have enough friends that have, you know, gone out and about, and myself too. Like, I just didn't anticipate that having a large brown bear on me would do anything but the most extensive damage.
They decided to hike the few miles back out instead of call for help. In retrospect, she admits that may not have been the best call. After more than an hour, they made it back to her boat. Back in Juneau at Bartlett Regional Hospital, doctors cleaned and stapled gashes in Compton's scalp. She also got a few stitches, an x-ray, and a CT scan. Her hand is in a brace, and she doesn't have full use of it yet.
I've got, my Halloween costume put together early. It's just some Frankenstein. I mean, I look like a hybrid between Chucky and Frankenstein right now.
The sow also left something behind. A shard of tooth was embedded in Compton's scalp. Even with her injuries, Compton knows she's lucky.
It is more amazing to me that it literally gnawed on my head and used its paws and teeth to the point where it got a piece of tooth stuck in my head. And I, with the exception of a few staples, don't have much to show for it.
This wasn't Compton and her friend's first encounter with a bear on Admiralty. A few years ago, they were hunting deer in early November. Usually by that time of year, most of the bears are settling down for winter. But Compton says it had been a bad salmon and bear year. On that hunt, a predatory bear approached them, coming within 10 feet before Compton fired a warning shot to scare it off. It's almost unbelievable that she's had two extremely close calls.
There are people that hunt way harder than I do, that have been in Juneau for 8 times as long as I have and have never had something remotely close to this happen.
Still, both Compton and Orr feel like there's nothing they could have done differently to avoid the situation with the mother bear. Department of Fish and Game wildlife biologist Carl Koch agrees.
They're doing what hunters do, and they surprise a bear. It sounded like very close by, too close to use a deterrent. And so, yeah, I'm not judging anything that they did.
Koch says Admiralty is home to one of the highest concentrations of brown bears in the world. And this time of year is when they're especially active as they prepare for hibernation.
But if you think about all the hunters that are out on the landscape and how uncommon something like this is, it's reassuring.
For now, Compton isn't in a rush to head back into brown bear territory.
I feel like I've had my fair share of brown bear encounters, and I don't need any more. Am I going to take up knitting and, like, I don't know, painting rocks? Probably not.
She still has the tiny shard of the bear's tooth. She says maybe she'll put it in a locket. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Adeline Baxter.
Thank you, Adeline, for that story on the bear attack. It seems like people just love animal stories.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's always funny when you look at the year-end list online of what people read most. And obviously, there's some really big local topics in there, but things like this also get in because it's just like such a reminder for folks of how wild the area around Juneau is and how close we are to nature and how we either do or don't always coexist with that. So I think that's why this was a really popular one. And also because Amanda Compton is just such a badass and was a really great interview. So I appreciate Amanda.
And I'm sure part of it too is that because the KTO website is available around the world, that I think people interested in Alaska probably click on that. And that brings us to the number two story, which is also something that I think people around the country are interested in, but mostly it really affects us here in Juneau. And it's been happening for the last couple years. This story is another story that Anna Canny did, our climate and weather reporter. She covered it last year. It's about the Mendenhall River and the glacial outburst floods. And so let's take a listen to this. This is Mendenhall River neighbors recount narrow escapes after record-breaking glacial outburst flood.
Floyd Dryden Middle School housed dozens of residents that were displaced by Tuesday morning's record-breaking glacial outburst flood in Juneau. Weston Holland was one of them. On Monday, he went to bed in his apartment on Emily Drive. But in the early morning, he woke to find water on the floor, so he went to investigate.
And in the process of doing that, the front door had this look of water coming into the side, like Titanic. And then the bottom of the frame of the door broke in, and a wall of water came in.
Water from the swollen Mendenhall River rushed into the basement apartment. The force of it pushed Holland back and flooded kitchen appliances like the stove and the fridge.
It went from just a couple inches on the floor to about my navel, I would say about a minute and a half. It was just coming in quick.
The Hollands knew that flooding was underway in the Mendenhall Valley. But during a catastrophic flood this time last year, their home didn't even take on enough water to activate the sump pumps. This year was different. Holland woke up his wife and their four sons so they could evacuate, and they got out just in the nick of time. The family arrived at the shelter around the time the floodwaters crested, just past 3 a.m. They were soaked from wading through the glacial water.
It was pretty much hypothermia that started setting in. The pain in my toes was bad.
Weston's beloved pet dog was left behind, along with a cat, a lizard, and some ducks. Glacial outburst floods happen every year in Juneau, when water from the glacial lake known as Suicide Basin drains into the Mendenhall River. But the last 2 years have been unprecedented. Last year's flood pushed the river to nearly 15 feet. This year, the river rose to a new record of nearly 16 feet. Deputy City Manager Robert Barr said the water spread much further into valley neighborhoods this time. But the city is still trying to figure out how many houses were impacted.
Many homes experienced some level of flooding, some significant. I think somewhere in the vicinity of 100, maybe hundreds. We just don't really have a good handle on that yet.
The type of damage is different from last year's flood, too. Many riverside properties were damaged by severe erosion last year, which undermined foundations and caused two houses to collapse entirely.
We saw much less erosion this year. Don't have complete reports yet, but the significance of the impact this year is related to standing water.
The city issued an evacuation notice on Monday, but not everyone left. Debbie Penrose Fisher stayed put even after ALMP cut power to her neighborhood on G Street.
I mean, last year we saw the water, but it wasn't anywhere near.
By the time she realized this year might be different, it was too late.
We were completely surrounded, and it wasn't just still water. It was kind of like a pretty heavy flow.
Bound to her wheelchair, she wasn't sure how to escape. She relies on a supply of oxygen, and the batteries on her tank started running low. Just past 7 a.m., she made a call to Capital City Fire and Rescue.
It was stressful because I was trapped.
A rescue team was able to pick her up with a raft and take her to the shelter. Mayor Beth Weldon visited the shelter just before noon. She spent the morning patrolling the flooded neighborhoods.
Instead of a few inches in people's houses, they had feet, so taking lots of pictures to hopefully help with a national declaration of disasters.
The city and borough of Juneau has already declared the flood a local emergency and put in requests for state and federal aid. Governor Mike Dunleavy followed suit by declaring a state disaster emergency. Those declarations will free up recovery money at the state level and potentially draw attention from the federal government. In a statement on Facebook, Senator Dan Sullivan said he's been in touch with a top administrator at the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Mayor Weldon said she's spoken to Senator Lisa Murkowski, too.
We're already talking about what can we do to prevent this, because it was a foot higher than last year's, ironically on the same date, and we can't have this an annual thing.
But she says it will take federal help to quell those floods in the future. With help from Clarice Larson in Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
Yeah, that's going to be something that is going to be ongoing, Adeline, right, in terms of continuing to look at this glacial flooding. We are looking for a new climate reporter. Anna, sadly, is leaving Alaska, and she has done such great coverage here on all of the things that are happening with the climate. She covered the Wrangell mudslide. She's covered the flooding here in Juneau. She's been fantastic in terms of that. And those kinds of stories are so important to us because of the environment and how that relates to us. But I'm sure that the news team is planning to continue covering all things climate.
Yep, absolutely. We're hiring to replace Anna right now. And, you know, she's in many ways irreplaceable. She just could break down like really complicated stories like nobody else. And so we're going to miss her a lot, but we're going to stay in touch, and she's going to impart a lot of her knowledge to the new person when they come on. And through this fall, she's continued to cover the ongoing conversation about flood mitigation, and all of that is playing out right now in the valley with this flood barrier project that has been proposed. There's obviously a lot of people in support of it. There are definitely neighbors who are opposed. And so that's going to be a big story heading into next year. Is that going to make it through? There's a vote that's going to happen among neighbors that will determine whether the project can move forward. And then the idea is to get those flood barriers in place along the river, placed by next summer when the next flood is likely to happen. So that's going to be a hot 2025 topic for sure.
Okay, before we get to the number one most viewed story online this year from KTO News, we want to mention one other story that was of real community relevance this year. And that was a shooting that happened this summer. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a very public incident downtown in which police officers shot and killed Stephen Kissack, who was an unhoused man that a lot of people sort of recognize downtown. It happened in the middle of the day. Very sad circumstances leading up to it. And then, you know, it led to a community conversation around policing. The state Office of Special Prosecutions found that the use of force was justified due to the way that Stephen Kissack had been acting prior to when police opened fire. But it's still an ongoing conversation in terms of some of the policies that JPD has on their books, especially body camera footage. That's been a conversation statewide this year about when that's released. And so that is something that JPD has said that they are examining what their timeline is for releasing body camera footage. And I suspect that that discussion will continue also into next year, especially since there was another very sad incident just this past week with another fatal police shooting in Juneau. Really sad stories, really important conversations. Obviously, policing has been a major topic nationwide for several years now, and Alaska and Juneau, it's no different.
Yeah, it's something that will be ongoing coverage as we move into 2025. Okay, coming up, we're going to talk with the new managing editor of KTO News, Claire Strempel. But before we do, we have the number one most viewed story of 2024 for KTO News. And of course, it's by Anna Canny. And this story is Close Encounters with a Curious Killer Whale Remind Juneau Residents of the City's Wild Nature. So again, another animal story, Adeline.
Yep, people love them.
People love the
especially
animal
whales. Especially whales.
Especially whales. But I want to thank you, Adeline, for joining me for this segment, helping to count down these stories and also sort of round it out with some other topics and stories that affected Juneau this year. Is there anything else that we can look forward to before we hear the story from Anna from the news team in 2025? I know we've talked about Curious Juneau, and obviously Tlingit Word of the Week is going to continue. Tongass Voices is going to continue. Are there any other projects or interesting things coming up for the news team?
Definitely. I mean, the most exciting thing is that we're going to have two new reporters joining us pretty early on in 2025. And so that hiring is happening right now. And so we'll be very excited to get those folks in the mix. And we also have a few new folks already who've joined us. Morning host Mike Lane. It's been really great to have him. Claire Strempel, of course. But yeah, I can't end 2024 without just giving a huge shout out to Clarice, Yvonne, and Anna. Our reporters worked so hard this year. Such incredible coverage from the three of them. And I want to emphasize to people, like, our newsroom has been twice the size in years past. You know, it's always fluctuated, but this year we were especially kind of strapped, pretty much half the size of what we'd been. So these guys put in so much work, and it was so appreciated by our listeners and viewers. And by me. They made my life so much better to be able to edit their stories, and they're just excellent, lovely people to work with.
So here's Anna's story, Close Encounters with a Curious Killer Whale Remind Juneau Residents of the City's Wild Nature, the number one story viewed online this year from KTOO News. This is Juneau Afternoon.
It was a sunny Friday in Juneau, and Lindsay Bloom was eager to get outside and enjoy it.
I was like, okay, I'm going to go for a little paddleboard. I'm going to just watch the sun sparkle on the water. That's going to like light me up from just a day of emails and whatever else. And then I'll go get the kids. I mean, it just seems so benign.
At Bloom's home on Lena Loop Road, the ocean is practically part of her backyard. So she goes paddleboarding often. But this particular afternoon was far from routine. A few minutes into her paddle, she spotted a pod of orcas, four or five of them, out on the horizon. She took a video to send to her parents, but then she spotted a shadow underneath her.
I looked down, and I saw this white color, and then her fins sliced up out of the water.
Before she knew what was happening, a large female killer whale lifted her paddleboard up out of the water.
And at that moment, it was like terror.
The board bobbed as Bloom stood frozen. The whale circled her about half a dozen times, diving under the board and then spinning around to look up. Bloom said they made eye contact.
And then I started talking to her. I was like, I have kids. Please go away.
Eventually, the whale did go away, and Bloom was able to make it to shore safely, though she was really shaken up. But later that afternoon, the whale sidled up to Matt Musselwhite's red skiff. He was sailing near Point Louisa, just a few hundred yards down the shoreline. When he saw her black fins glistening at the surface of the water, he cut the engine to let the whale safely pass.
And instead, she just turned and charged right up to me and ran her dorsal fin down the side of the boat and went circled around the boat a couple of times and then took off to join the rest of her pack.
Musselwhite said the whale was gentle.
I think she might have been a curious teenager just coming to check out my little boat.
Marine mammal specialist Susie Tierlink with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration said there were at least three reports of close encounters with this orca, who was, in fact, a teenager, though no one has been able to identify the specific whale or the pod it belongs to. In a social media video posted by another paddler, the whale splashes around making circles before poking her head out and spraying from her blowhole. Tierlink said that most of the time, killer whales will keep their distance when they come across people.
At the same time, they're really smart, really curious animals. And they're at home in their environment, and if something strikes their curiosity, they might kind of push that envelope.
Tierlink said it's best for whales and people to keep our distance.
So we don't want killer whales to get, individuals to get too comfortable going up to people and getting that close to people.
So if you encounter a whale yourself, Tierlink's advice is to move away as quickly as possible. Orcas tend to migrate over large areas relatively quickly. So while they're pretty common in Juneau, the curious teenage whale and her pod have probably left the area by now. Bloom said learning more about the animal's curious nature has calmed her fears a bit. She feels there's a reputation around the meat-eating marine mammals, which made her feel more afraid in the moment.
We call them killer whales, which now I'm like, yeah. Why do we have to call them that? Because it just makes them, like, scarier than they need to be.
And in the weeks since the close encounter, she's come to appreciate it, in a way.
This is so Alaska. Like, all you gotta do is walk out your front door and, like, it's epic.
But for now, she's planning to paddleboard on Auk Lake instead. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
This is Juneau Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Claire Strempel has been a leading journalist in Alaska for many years. She's a former health reporter for KTOO and most recently was a senior reporter for the Alaska Beacon. Claire is back roaming the halls of KTOO as the new managing editor of the newsroom. Gunnith Chisha Igudi, thank you so much, Claire, for coming in. It's a pleasure to chat with you. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio. Wasiati, welcome back. How's it going?
It's going great. Thanks for the welcome, Boston.
Of course. Yeah, so you have been in and around the state of Alaska as a reporter for a while. I was just hoping that you might give us just a quick sort of, you know, digest of your journey in Alaska as a journalist.
All right. The quick digest is I got here at the end of 2018 with KHNS, and I was a daily news reporter on all Haines, Skagway, and Clutchwan topics. And then after about 2.5 years there covering everything from local news to major disasters. We had a huge landslide in 2020 to the pandemic. I came over to KTOO and I was a health reporter. I worked on stories about health statewide, also about language revitalization in Juneau, a little bit in Kodiak. I got to do some reporting. Then did a big investigative project working on food stamps and how thousands of people in the state weren't getting access. And then after that, I was in the state capitol, which was an education. And I was actually an education reporter and then also worked on justice reporting for the Alaska Beacon. And now I'm back.
And now you're here. And so what was your interest in becoming a managing editor, moving up from the daily reporting that you were doing into sort of leading a team?
That's a great question. I initially never saw myself in an editorial or managerial role. I was mostly interested in writing, but KTOO is a really special place, and the reporters that work here are incredible. And the idea of being able to work with them, to mentor them, to help them craft stories, sound rich stories, help them with breaking news, and guide them with what I realized has started to become several years of experience, help them maybe avoid some mistakes I've made in the past or guide them just through that process and help them think about the news. Yeah, find their voices, which are so wonderful. The reporting that comes out of here is such a connector for this community and for the state, and I wanted to be part of that again.
You know, Adam was just here and we were talking about, you know, all of the amazing reporting that three reporters basically have done this year, Yvonne Crumry, Clarice Larson, and Anna Canny. And they have been doing so much work. It feels like they're a newsroom of 10 people with the amount of reporting that they put out. And we've highlighted some wonderful stories this year. And we know that we are losing Anna Canny. Her last day is today on the 31st of December. And she's moving on to Colorado and in a new position, which is great for her. We're going to miss her, though. But this brings up the fact that we are part of your duties as managing editor is to hire new people. And there's a couple new positions coming forward. Tell us a little bit about what you're going to be hiring for.
We're hiring for an education reporter and a climate reporter. Those positions, we have a ton of super talented applicants. We're so excited about all the possibilities right now. So we're figuring out who has the right blend of experience and that will complement our team and the perspectives that we bring to the news. So we're excited about that. Obviously, we're going to miss Anna a lot. She's not replaceable, but someone new will carry on a kind of a long tradition with their own spin.
And we have a new Morning Edition host that we've just hired.
Mike Lane.
Yes, Mike Lane has just started a couple weeks ago, so that's part of the news team as well moving forward. But I'm curious about like what you might think of as the future for you. What does the newsroom look like in 5 years for you?
Well, hopefully it's full of reporters. I remember when I first visited the KTUO newsroom, I think there were about 12 people in the newsroom. There was a partnership with the Alaska desk. We had a partnership with the state capitol reporter, which we currently have in-house now as well, but through Alaska Public Media. But just full of people with a strong balance of breaking news stories and deeply reported sound-rich features. I'm hoping that we have a culture where even though the news can be tough, there is a culture of positivity and teamwork and an open conversation with this community. This is a pretty special job. Being a journalist in a small town is incredible. And so I hope it's a place where we can all really celebrate that and celebrate each other.
Is there anything that you're looking forward to special project-wise, or are there things that you have in mind yet for the future? Or are you still sort of figuring all that out?
For reporters, we have some things on the horizon, but I don't want to make any grand proclamations before we have our full team assembled because we don't know who we're working with yet because we have two positions unfilled, and that will actually double our reporting capacity. So I think any big projects will be things that we'll want to grow in together. But people can be looking forward to continued Tongass Voices, another season of Curious Juno. But yeah, with no major podcast or series announcements yet.
Not yet. Yes, not things yet. That are brewing as they go. That's kind of cool. Is there anything else that you want to mention about what's coming up or what you look forward to in the future here at KTOO?
I'm looking forward to spending time in the community. Please come in, say hi to us. We've been starting a new initiative called Coffee with KTOO, and it's where you can come by the station, have coffee and usually a donut, and chat with us. Tell us what you want to hear. Tell us what works for you, what doesn't. We had just a great kickoff morning Coffee with KTOO just a few weeks ago, and we're still riding high, and we really listened, and you'll be hearing some changes, and we want to keep doing that again and again. So stay tuned. We'll promo another Coffee with KTOO coming up here probably in mid-February.
Awesome. That sounds great. Well, it's really a pleasure to have you back in the halls of KTOO running the news team now, which is fantastic. And I think we all look forward to the future and what kind of stories will be coming out of the newsroom in the future. So great.
Yeah, thank you.
Claire, thank you so much. Gonna cheese. That will do it for the 2024 News and Review Roundup right here on Juno Afternoon. Thank you to my guests, Adeline Baxter, Audience Engagement Editor, and Claire Strimple, new Managing Editor. Here's wishing you and yours a fantastic end to 2024 and a wondrous and happy 2025. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunath Cheesh, and have a glorious Juno year.